Yeah, I watched one of your sets recently that you put on Facebook, like your whole entire set, and I think you have a thing similar to me. It's like having your, do you feel like you have your act kind of figured out now, for the most part?
I wouldn't say I have it figured out, but I understand how I write jokes. So,
right.
I understand what my method is of writing jokes and I kind of have a good grip on what I think is funny and what will work. I'm not saying I have a full grip on it, but I've definitely gotten more solid.
Right, I feel that similarity, like, with that, because it's kind of, you know, it just gets easier over the years of doing it and knowing your material down. And what I love is you just, you know, it's kind of weird to say, but you have a lot of jokes that are just, they're clever and they work, and it just seems like it always seems like you polish a set really well, if that makes sense.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how to write jokes that are just like, hey, my vibe is just hilarious, or my, you know, the situation I'm talking about is just so funny. I don't know how to tell jokes like that. Don't, like, for me, a joke, it's gotta be whittled down and written in a way that's like, it's almost like a poem that doesn't rhyme.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Or it's also, it can kind of be like a vignette. It can be like a mini movie of like just what happened to you and those experiences. Like, I think you and me were both very self-deprecating. And that's tough to do nowadays because there's a lot of, you know, with roast battling and like hip-hop culture. It's kind of like old school now to do that. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. I do agree. But the way I like to see the way I do self-deprecating is that I do self-deprecating so that you trust me. So
right, trust exactly.
Me, you feel comfortable with me, and then I turn on an edge.
Right.
That I don't expect.
Of course.
You know what I mean?
And yeah.
And then I keep the edge going throughout the set. And then, one thing I like to do is, you know, people have their perceptions of me. And so I play off those perceptions right off the bat, and then I flip them.
Oh, for sure. And yeah. I've always really admired that you kind of, you put yourself in situations, you know, that's a good thing. Of like, you always challenge yourself. I feel like that's something you always try to do.
Oh, yeah, for sure, man. I feel like if I'm ever getting too comfortable with things, ever feel like it's too easy, I just feel like I need growth. I'll do something different, try to create something different, just to kind of wake me up a little bit.
Right, because you can just get stuck in the certain grinds of, you know, wherever you are in stand up, and it can be comfortable to stay, you know, in one place and be like, okay, they love me here. I can just come to this mic all the time and just do these same things. And it really takes a lot to, you know, do that because it's not easy to do. The hard thing with comedy is just scheduling stuff around your life, I feel.
Yeah, 100%.
And it's like the more you do it, the more you want to do it. But you also, like, it's healthy to live life. So it's like, you know, there's that balance.
Yeah, I mean, for a while, I didn't really balance my life at all. It was just all comedy, and you know, now I'm trying to lean more into having experiences, doing more things that, you know, that change my perspective a little bit, because I can't be writing the same way forever, or I can't be writing about the same stuff forever.
Oh yeah, for sure, and it seems like, you know, you really turned. Like, not that you were, you know, anything wrong, you just made a lot of self-improvements. Like, you got healthier, you started working out, so your body changed a lot, and it just sort of had this new impact on your life and gave you new stuff to talk about, right?
Yeah, I would say so, in a way. I feel like, though, that I'm I'm kind of like I'm in the Charmeleon stage of my life,
right?
Where, you know, like I'm getting to where I want to be, but I'm definitely not the man in the comic I want to be yet. So,
oh yeah, I don't think we ever get to that place. Really, I think that's kind of the frustrating and like also really cool thing about stand up is you can't really master it. So there's always stuff that we're going to look at ourselves of like, okay, this I need to get better at. And to me, it's just always trying to just have the better set, you know. And it seems like you've also really like worked with a lot of really cool people.
Yeah, I've worked with a ton of cool comics. It's really cool to work with people who are doing things way bigger than you. Even people who are famous, like Mark Norman and stuff like that.
Right.
And it's cool to not only to work with them, but to be around them, because to be around greatness means that it's almost like stars don't feel like they're too far away if you're sitting right next to them.
Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
And like,
so it's like you could be one of those one day. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Like it's not too far of a reach anymore when those guys are in the same room as you.
And the thing I've noticed is I've had a couple headliners on the podcast, and it's so interesting how like we sort of, I feel like a lot of us who are starting out, still we kind of feel like we kind of like hierarchy like comedians a little bit. And then when you meet them, they don't really have those hierarchies that we think, and they just view us as comics. Like, do you know who Gianmarco Cerezzi is?
Yeah,
I had him on the podcast, and he's like the biggest name that I had on. And he was just so like humble and nice to me, and like just viewed me as another comic. And it was like so refreshing. It was like, oh, that's awesome. Like, because they just remember like the early stages so much of what the shit they went through. They're just like, I don't think they forget.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, one thing I've never forgotten is a lot of comedy is suffering.
Oh, yeah.
Like a lot of suffering for little pieces of success.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And when success starts to grow more than the suffering, you know, it doesn't mean you've forgotten the scars, you know?
Right.
And when you see new people, like, whenever I meet new people, or just, you know, I'm talking to somebody that's not as experienced as me, I always try to give them, you know, the respect of, like, you know, this guy could be bigger than me in 2 years. Who knows?
Right,
you know?
Of course. Yeah.
So treat everybody equally and don't ever look down on nobody, even if you're doing bigger things than they are, because...
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, because we're all... I think that's one of the cool things is, like, we're all stuck... even though we're all in different places sometimes, we're all kind of stuck in that mode of, oh, I could be better, I could be doing this. We always held ourselves pretty accountable for our stuff.
Yeah, and I feel like even a lot of super great comics that a lot of us look up to might have, like, career dysmorphia.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Totally.
To themselves, they're not really doing that well. Even though they're able to pay their rent, they're able to travel the country, they're able to buy property, but still to them, it's not enough. It's not good enough. And, comedy is just always chasing a dragon, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, and to me, I love that, like, being able to do it a whole lot is also a really cool thing. Have you been getting up a lot?
I don't go up as much as I used to. Like, back in the day, like when I say back in the day, I mean, like, maybe, like, 2 years ago, 3-4 years ago, mm-hmm. I was producing a bunch of shows. I was going up maybe 8-10 times a week. I was traveling a lot more, all that stuff. But, you know, I realized at some point that I was, like, I wasn't like living enough.
Right.
Where I wasn't writing enough. So I never left comedy. If anything, I felt like slowing down allowed me to write better, pay attention to my mistakes, pay attention to like my habits and things like that, and just hone myself a little better by not moving as fast.
Right. Yeah, because you can get stuck. You can just get, you know, you can also move too fast and, you know, ruin, it's, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. I used to say, you know, before the Chris Rock stuff happened, I was like, I used to say to people that were starting out, it's like, comedy can never hurt you physically. It can hurt you in a lot of other ways, but never physically. And now that's not true either. It's like,
except for, like, if you tell off the wrong guy on stage and then that guy attacks you or something, but
right,
that's very rare.
Very rare. Well,
even all the close calls that I've had.
Yeah, in your case. The thing that's another thing that just, you seem so, like, comfortable now with stuff, because you've been put in those situations.
I can say that I do feel that way, but now that I'm getting older, I've learned to value my life a lot more.
Oh, yeah.
And I realize that there's a lot of crazy people out there. So I try not to just say anything to just anybody.
Right.
I try to kind of, which I feel like sometimes I kind of puss out a little bit, just because I'm like, do I want to really piss off this guy? Even though, you know, I might have something really funny to say, it's not the coolest way to see things, but it's also like, I was leaning too hard into crowd work at one point, mm-hmm. where I was just doing crowd work all the time.
Right.
And now that I lean more into doing material, I'm loving how much material I'm cranking out, how structured it is and all that stuff. So yeah, I'm trying not to talk shit to hecklers. So
right.
Really pissed.
Well, I think what's so tough is we're sort of in the East Coast of comedy, and in that sort of tri-state of New Jersey, New York, Philly, audiences are a lot tougher, and they like a lot of meaner humor. And you have to sort of be tough on stage in a way of, like, not angry tough, but, like, you got to have a little bit of a backbone sometimes. And that can be really hard if you're a nice guy, like, person or comedian, where your vibe isn't really, you know, insulting people on stage.
I feel like sometimes a show needs that. Sometimes a show needs, like, because maybe the comics, some comics just want to do their material, and some comics are too timid to say anything back to somebody.
Right.
So, like, if a heckler is dominating the show, and nobody's able to take control over the show, the show's bombing until somebody's able to do that.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
There's one time,
yeah.
There's this lady, there's a packed show, I was just getting a guest spot,
mm-hmm.
but it was a packed show, and when I get there, everybody's bombing, it's packed as fuck, everybody's bombing, and the reason why everybody's bombing is because there's one lady in the corner who's, like, heckling at everybody,
mm-hmm.
and she won't stop heckling, but she keeps screaming these heckles where she makes fun of people as they're on stage, and she won't let them finish talking, and so I go on stage, and the moment I go on stage, she goes, ha-ha-ha. He looks like Harry Potter. He looks like Harry Potter. And at this time, I had rectangle glasses, not the circle ones I had. And I said, she screamed, and I said, hey, hey. And she got quiet. Everybody got quiet. I'm like, Harry Potter has circle glasses. These are rectangle glasses. You need glasses, bitch. And then fucking everybody went fucking crazy.
That's awesome.
And I just started making fun of the lady, and I started, like, shitting on who she was with and all that stuff, and then they stopped talking altogether, and then everybody was getting laughs after that. It's because they needed somebody to, like, to,
right,
somebody had to fight that lady, you know what I mean?
And it can be, you know, I feel like, you know, maybe 90% of the time, especially at a show more than an open mic, like at a show, like, people will be on the comedian's side. They will, you know, they want the show to go well. No one wants to go to a show that they paid to see and for it to go terribly. So if you take the reins like that, that's like a really cool way to do that, to bring the power back.
I feel like it's true that people want you to succeed, but I feel like it's also not true sometimes. I feel like some people sight watch comedy sometimes.
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, I don't want to sound cocky about what we do, but it is like, it is a thing that can piss people off who aren't doing something with their life or don't really have a lot of motivation in what they're doing, and there's a lot of jealousy of like us seeming confident in what we're doing in life.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. That's very, very true. I remember I had a big show. It was like one of the biggest shows I ever had at that time. It was like a theater show like 3 years ago. And I told somebody about it. And they had like a twinge in their eye when I was telling them. Almost like they were cringing in their soul when I told them about the news. And then before I left the bar I was at, they're like, "Hey, man, don't choke."
Oh, my God.
And I realized he said that not because he was trying to be a friend, but because, you know, he felt bad about himself not...
Right.
Not going for whatever dreams he had. You know what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah. And it's...
And, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that totally makes sense, like, that happened, you know. And it's such a hard thing, you know. I turn the comments off on my TikTok videos, because I'm just like, it's also because it's like not worth it to argue with people. It's like I'm killing on the video. Like, it's just a bonus that I put online. It's like, you know, I'm not going to sit there and be like, okay. But if I ever do have like comments and stuff, I always love to be like, if I got paid for that show, I'll be like, I know you hate this. I got paid $15 for this. Doesn't that really annoy you? It's like the shitty thing that you think is like crappy actually got me something.
Yeah, it got me a sandwich and surprise.
It's like, you know, because I don't know if you feel this way, like doing comedy a little bit more is, it can be hard because I think for me is like we kind of feel like we're owed something eventually. Like you want to get those bigger spots. You know, we don't want to make like, you know, like superstar level, but like, you know, we feel like we're owed something. Do you ever get that? Like in your.
Sure. There's definitely some part of me, that feels that way sometimes, but I've learned to kind of take most of that feeling out. That this feeling that I deserve things.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is that I am confident in the skill level that I'm at. I know that I'm pretty decent at stand-up comedy, you right. know?
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm decent enough where I'm, you know, I can do it and make it look professional. You know,
right, that, of course. Yeah, for sure.
And what I realized is that if other people can't see that yet, that is more than likely my fault. I am not pushing hard enough. I am not good enough. I am not undeniable yet.
Oh, you know? I can.
So the undeniability, I'm just not there yet to be considered undeniable. Where like, you know, I walk into a room and you know, they're like, oh yeah, we're definitely putting this guy up, you know?
Oh, I mean, for sure.
I walk into rooms and that'll happen where they're like, yo, you're going up next because we know you're going to do well. But it's like, you know, I can't go show up in New York and expect to get put up.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, but being undeniable, being so great that people are like, yeah, fuck yeah, of course we want you on. That's what I'm leaning towards, or what I'm not leaning towards, but what I'm working towards. And, you know, if people don't want me on their show right now, you know, all I can say to myself and, you know, to keep me going is that they will one day.
Right. And yeah. I think you know more than anybody that the grass is always sort of greener to a lot of us. Is like, you know, we'll get upset that we weren't, you know, picked for shows or something. And then we'll hear from, like, people that were on that show to be like, oh, the audience was terrible. It was not the right room. It's like you sort of look at things through roasted into glasses. I used to do that with you. When I met you once before you left for New York. And then I would see you on Facebook and you'd be doing all this cool shit. And I'd be like, I put you on a pedestal in kind of an unfair way. And then I saw you and I was like, he's still working things out like I am. And it was just like a thing I had to kind of like teach myself was like not to get jealous of people or think like that we're not on the same playing field.
Flattering, I guess, sometimes, where people think of me as this, and like almost as if I'm famous in this area, but I'm not.
Right.
I'm famous at all. You know, it's just the scene knows of me.
Right.
The scene knows of me, and you know, when people like, I've had people like be like, "Oh, I look up to you," and all like you know, it's comics, not
right. Comics. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And you know, I've hung out with comics where like they're like nervous with me, like they're nervous around me, because they I don't know, they're thinking I'm judging them, or they're like, you know, that they think I'm this big deal or something. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's flattering, and you know, I feel it's good to have recognition, but you know, what I realize is that if you let that stuff get to your head, you end up. It ends up ruining you creatively. It ends up ruining you as a person. It ends up just makes you shitty.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So just what I try to think about all the time is that, like, you know, all this could end at any moment. So just be fucking as humble and, you know, cool as you can, I guess.
Oh yeah, for sure. Because that's sort of the thing with comedy, as sort of like this beast that we take on. Is like any set you have, you could be, you know, you could have like 6 sets in a row that go well, and that one set after will just be like, we'll just remind you that, oh, we're not finished yet. We need something else to learn, something else to work on. You know?
Yeah.
It keeps you humble, yeah, those bombs. Like.
Yeah, for sure. Tommy will always humble you.
Yeah, so I didn't know if you'd be comfortable. I'm talking about this because you did talk about it on stage. You got an autism diagnosis?
Not a diagnosis, just, but most of my friends who have autism all heavily believe I have autism. Right. My therapist believes that I have some sort of issue. He hasn't diagnosed, he can't diagnose me, but.
Right.
So I have some sort of issue. Growing up, most of my life, I had trouble with eye contact.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of my time by myself learning. So a lot of people think that's kind of weird.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't really watch TV or things like that, like entertainment stuff as much. I'm mostly just learning shit. Like,
mm-hmm.
like before I talked to you, I was learning about... like ruins in the Aztec Empire and shit like
oh,
that.
Oh wow, that's the, really cool.
The social interactions between the Aztecs and the other natives around there, just shit like that. I'm really into learning shit. So, and so I know a lot of facts. I know a lot of. I can go deep into conversations about things. So I, you know, I feel like I'm a little Asperger's-y.
Right. Yeah. Like. It's so odd. I have, like, you know, my dad's side of the family and some stuff, because he's dyslexic, and then I have, like, just people, cousins on my family that are all throughout the spectrum, and me and my brother. So, like, to me, it's always been, like, social stuff is, like, the thing, eye contact and all that stuff. And I actually have a funny story. You might remember this. I went to see you when you were doing stuff with... Artie Lang and Rick Shapiro was there, and he was like sick at the time, so I gave him a weak handshake, which is not like too different from my regular handshake, and he chastised me for it, and I was like, this is like what would happen in the TV show of my life, Rick Shapiro yelling at me because I gave him a weird like weak handshake.
Yeah, I think I do remember that show.
Yeah. But you were just doing all that, like, type of stuff. That's, like, another thing that was kind of crazy that happened with you. Looking at that in hindsight, do you look back at that sometimes and, like, that was a crazy time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I look at all, you know, I've done a lot of, I've done comedy, like, kind of cool stuff doing comedy, you know, like traveling and opening for people like Artie and being around those moments, you know, hanging with the Jackass people and you know, and yeah, it's really cool to look back on. What's the things I'm most proud of, honestly, is not like the most flashy things, but the situations that my determination and that my comedic ability got me through the situation.
Oh yeah,
like I used to bark for clubs, right? And like there are clubs that I would travel like 2 hours to get to the club. At the time, I was doing comedy full time, and so I would spend all my money to get to the club, and then I'd bark outside of these clubs, hoping to make enough money to get back. And not only would I would bark enough to get back, but I would also have to kill in order to keep that job. Like,
right,
if I go up on stage and I bomb, they're not letting me back even to sell tickets. You know,
right.
So the fact that I was able to, you know, keep my spots there for so long, you know, I was able to make enough money not only to go back home, but to, you know, buy whatever I wanted and shit. Like, just little successes like that, like personal successes that, you know, nobody really was around for.
But, oh, right.
For me, they were a major victory.
No, that's really cool to hear. And, like, that's cool to hear from me because I know how, you know, it's kind of tough to talk about comedy with older people or people who aren't really in the industry. Is like, it's so tough to break into comedy clubs. Like, so much of what we do, and like, I've grown to love it, like sort of the underground comedy scene, but it is kind of tough to break into even that and be like, okay, am I in the right friend group? And like, you know, it's like,
yeah, it's even hard to get into barking. It's hard,
right?
Like, you know, so a lot of people think anybody can get into barking. There's, you know, there's different levels of barking where, like, some people make it a job where they,
right,
they're barking 6 days a week, 7 days a week, and, you know, they bark for the pair, they bark for, you know, all these other clubs, and, you know, and it's hard to get in there, you know?
Right.
Everybody wants it, even though it's, like, embarrassing that you're going to be standing in the corner and being like, comedy show.
Right.
Yeah, it's very interesting how much comics love comedy so much. They're willing to embarrass and torture themselves just for 5 minutes.
Oh yeah, for sure. I think it's because like it's our specialty thing. Like, a lot of people have a specialty thing. I think it's like the same thing with like a chef, you know. If you love to cook, it's different when you're, you know, cooking in private and then you get to cook in front of people. It's like, for us, it's like, it's cool to be funny in person, but to have those moments on stage where, like, you kind of have all the attention, it's, like, really cool to have that moment.
Oh, yeah. It feels like magic. It literally feels like for example, the jokes that I have written and the jokes. So most of the jokes that I do when I do a show are usually jokes that have their ratio is about 90% laughs. You know, so whenever I get, even though I know they're it's just jokes, it's just words. When I'm on stage and then I get a big pop from those things, those jokes that I rely on, jokes that I've written, it literally feels like, even though I know it's going to happen, it feels like magic. It feels like a superpower.
It does feel like a superpower. That's...
What I find the most interesting thing about it is that what you're doing up there when you're on stage is, because you're the focal point of attention, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're unifying all the minds in the crowd into a hive mind,
right,
sort of thing. If you're doing it correctly,
yeah,
if you're bringing them all in the same, if they all laugh, if they all laugh a big laugh, that means that you took them all down the same path and they were all able to get there together.
Right.
Which is almost it literally never happens when where like an entire crowd is thinking the same exact thing, you know?
Right.
It's super powerful, man, and it's the coolest thing in the world.
Oh yeah, it is. And the cool thing with it is it's almost, I don't know the word for it. It, like, enraptures other people. Like, you can be having a good set, like, an okay set, and certain people will not be laughing, and then all of a sudden they'll be laughing because it's communal. They'll see, like, if 80% of the room is laughing, they're not going to be, like, want to be left out. So they'll begin to, like, let loose and enjoy it. Like, even if they don't, like, laugh, they'll smile, they'll get into it. Because it's, like, it's just a communal thing. It's almost, like, you grew up with a lot of religion, right? So does that kind of, like, remind you of, like, pastors and stuff? Like, how they sort of have that, like, getting them on their sort of side and their...
For sure. The thing that happens, especially in, like, sermons and shit like that, where, like, if a priest or a pastor says something that's powerful, you'll see everybody in unison, like, shake their head and, like, even go,
Right.
Like you'll get that where everybody in the crowd agrees with what this guy's saying. And even with laughs.
Yeah, for sure.
One of the first times... Well, you know, it may not have been a stand-up comedy set, but I did a joke on stage, and it was one of the first times I ever got a collective big laugh. And I remember everything about that moment. And it was something real simple. I used to give speeches when I was a kid, and one of the speeches I gave was about the four principles of God, like the four qualities of God. So it's love, justice, wisdom, and power, right, according to the Bible.
Right.
And so as a kid, when I did, like, love, justice, wisdom, and power, with love, I made, like, a little heart on my chest with my hands, and it was like, love. And I was, like, justice, where, like, I made it seem like I had, like, a sword in my hand. And then, like, you know, power, where, like, I flex my muscles and shit. And, you know, it was the only part of the speech that was, like, silly.
Right.
But it got, like, a big laugh. And it's literally the first memory I have getting a big laugh. And I was, like, 9.
Oh, yeah. Those big laughs when you're younger and you're, like, just sort of figuring out that you're funny as a human is, like, the coolest thing. Because, like, I grew up with a lot of, like, just bullying and being picked on. So my stuff came from, you know, like, comebacks I would have. And I always say this a bunch on the podcast, like, I would never get in trouble with school because I would always make my teachers laugh with, like, whatever comeback I came up with. And then it was just, like, it got to a point where my personality was pretty snarky. And I was just, like, I don't want to be this mean, funny guy. I want to be, like, make people happy with my comedy. So that's sort of how I changed that. It was just, like, you know, whatever I can do to make people happier. Because, you know, not to be, like, depressing or anything, but we live in a pretty, you know, stressful time, stressful period. And, you know, being able to make people laugh is, like, the best thing you can do for people, you know. Even if it's just, like, a 5-minute set or, like, even 3 minutes, you're like, if you can give people that sort of reprieve of, like, okay, for this moment, we can be happy.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's why I also, like, I try to stay clear from, unless I can make it really, really, really funny where, like, you forget that it's a bad subject or, like,
right,
a Dyson subject, I usually try to stay clear of like, dicey subjects. Like, for example, like, I have a school shooter joke. I usually stay away from school shooter jokes, but this school shooter joke, I feel like, was clever. Because I tied it in with being Jehovah's Witness.
Right.
And it would work really well. And it worked really well, like, maybe, like, the first 5 times I did it. And then there was a bunch of recent school shootings. Not recently, but at the time.
Right.
And then it just stopped working altogether, and it also felt wrong that I was even saying the joke, you know?
Right.
And I realized, it's like, oh, this, you know, people are legitimately sad about what's going on, so don't bring up the things that make them sad.
Right. I think it's really cool that you're able to do that with your background in Jehovah's Witness. Just hearing about it, just, you know, I can imagine that wasn't easy, you know, to talk about. And were you ever, like, has it had any negative effect on maybe your personal life or, like, people seeing you do comedy? Has it ever really had those moments, or has it been pretty much like people don't know?
I would say, for a long time, I believed it to be negative.
Mm-hmm.
For a long time, I believed that, you know, what I've been through in being a Jehovah's Witness, all that stuff, hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
But in the end, like, where I am now, which I don't, I hope is not the end, but in, where I am right now, I feel like I don't regret it. Mm-hmm. I don't regret how I was raised. I don't regret being a Jehovah's Witness. I don't regret, what I do regret is the time wasted. How long it took for me to be who I am now.
Right.
I wish I was as smart as I am now, as awoken as I am now. I wish I was that in my 20s. That's pretty much it. I don't regret my past as, you know, yeah, sure, I'm not the best with women. You know, I'm a little awkward, and, you know, I don't have the same kind of attachments to holidays and to, I don't have the same feeling for a lot of social events mm-hmm. that people are really attached to.
Right.
I also feel like because Jehovah's Witnesses have, stay away from the world, stay away from the world, because the world is bad,
mm-hmm.
you know? So I still have some of, like, not like that the world is bad and to stay away, but this, secludedness,
mm-hmm.
That I feel like may be a little negative at sometimes,
right.
But I like how much I like to be alone. I love being alone.
Oh, me too. You know, it's so weird. I have like a 4-hour period of, like, I can go out and be social for like 4 hours, and then I have to be by myself for like 8 hours. Just be like, because I can just get overstimulated and just, like, you know, it just can be too much, you know. It's like hard, because it's almost like, that's a funny thing about doing comedy, is like you're viewed as sometimes this social butterfly, and I think all comics have this, is like, a lot of us aren't that social as people. So it's kind of a weird thing for us to pursue, of like, oh yeah, I'm gonna have to be in front of people, not just on stage, but, you know, you get there, you gotta talk to comics, and, you know, it's fun, like, when you get to do that, but for sometimes you gotta get there, you know, there might be a drink minimum, you gotta get that, you know, it's expensive to travel, it's like all the little stuff. I once said this on stage, that, like, and it sounded way more sadder than I intended. It's like, on stage, it's like, even if it goes bad, it's like, this is where I'm the happiest. It's like, you know, everywhere else, I don't know what I'm doing. On stage, it's like, okay, at least I kind of, this is like a safe haven a little bit.
Yeah, for me, doing comedy, like, the stage is where all the fun is had.
Right.
For me, I like my comic friends, but the most nerve-wracking part of any event that I do, comedy-wise, is hanging with a lot of comics. Like, I'm only good in, like, groups of small groups. Like,
right.
I don't like large groups. And,
me neither.
I can't help it. I don't feel comfortable. And,
I'm the, like, same way.
Bars with a bunch of comics, and comics that are, like, up and coming, big, like, not big comics, but you know, big in our scene,
mm-hmm.
and I see how they all like they're in giant groups together, and they, you know, and I can do that. I can hang in a group like that, but I can only do it for like 30 minutes to like an hour.
Oh yeah, you know? For sure. So, yeah.
I'm small. Like, I got to step outside. I can't. I just can't be in this close proximity and
right.
Just deal with this much stimulus. And I feel like that's also, you know, it's probably also like a autism thing. That's
oh yeah. Know, that I got well, that's the same thing that I have, and you know, it's a couple. Like, for the past couple of years, you know, I recently moved back with my parents, but I lived with VJ for 2 years, which was great, but I hung out a lot with VJ and Dan Caprio, and they're both Italians who are very social people, so they'd like to stay out at mics after mics for, like, 3 hours just talking with people, and I'd be like, can we go home, man? like, I don't want to be a buzzkill, but, like, the mic is over.
Yeah, I totally get that. A lot of times when I'm doing comedy, I just want to get the fuck out of there.
Right. And it's like, that's the thing that I see now is a lot of, like, there's a couple people, there's this guy, Joe Hissor, I have on the podcast, he, like, runs a couple shows, and, like, he always wants to, like, party afterwards. He's a young guy, he always wants to party afterwards. I'm like, I need to go home and, like, play video games and decompress. It's like, even if I'm hyping my body, I'm like, I don't have the, like, thing of, like, I just did everything on stage. I just gave you all my personality on stage. Like,
yeah.
I can't go and party afterwards.
Yeah. I mean, I like to party, man.
Right, yeah.
I can party and I can have a good time. And, you know, if I get loose enough, yeah, I can hang with the big group and shit.
Yeah.
But just nastily, like, completely, like, buzzed and sober, I'm like, I want to get out of here.
Right, you know? For sure.
If I'm, like, drunk, then I'm like, all right, let's hang loose, you know?
Right. Well, there is a huge party aspect to comedy, and that can be, you know, hard to, you know, do all the time. You know, you're like, you know, can't really be healthy to do that all the time, and there's such like a yeah, and it surprises me how much people still party and like how much that aspect is still in comedy. Of like, you think that stuff would have gone away after like the 70s and 80s when people were like going crazy like that, but no, people still after shows like they really like to party.
I mean, hey, alcohol has existed since the dawn of mankind.
Oh, yeah, so, sure, yeah.
Like, there's some sort of appeal, you know?
Right.
That's undeniable.
Or, this is kind of off topic. I was curious if this is you, because there's a little bit of it in comedy. Are you a weed guy?
A weed guy?
Yeah.
I smoke a lot of weed.
You do. Yeah, I used to do edibles like last year. I kind of stopped, but like that was what I did. And you know, it's funny how like that can really help for anxious people. Like it's kind of a really good like thing, like calming thing.
I feel like it all depends on what strain you get.
Oh yeah, for sure.
For me, it has to do with the strain. People will be like, "Oh, that's bullshit. It's all the same." No, it's not the same.
Right.
I've been smoking so much weed, all different types of weed, for a long, long time, and it really does make a difference what strain you're using, you know, how you're ingesting it, if you're doing edibles, if you're doing, you know, smoking or whatever.
Yeah.
For me, I don't know what it is. I know I still get my paranoia moments and my weird moments or whatever. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Where it's not, I'm not necessarily having a good time while I'm smoking it, but it's not all the time. But those moments that I do have those uncomfortable moments, I feel like there's some sort of underlying issue that I'm not paying attention to with my conscious mind, and the weed is making my subconscious like tap on the glass, and it's making me uncomfortable.
Oh, that makes sense. Yeah, I think that's the thing with like all like kind of all substances is like, we know they're not too good for us, but you kind of need to hurt yourself a little bit to kind of feel like, also get those emotions out. Like, you know, it's better to have that than to, you know, be angry all the time or, like, keep stuff bottled inside.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So, I also wanted to ask, have you been doing any more writing? Like, creative writing and stuff like that that you used to do?
Yeah. I have a bunch of stuff that I'm working on. It's hard because I have ADHD, so I'm like, I have a lot of things that I'm working on at once. It's almost like I'm running an entire kitchen at a restaurant, but I don't hire anybody to help me. Like, I'm making like 1,000 meals at once. You know what I'm saying? Right. I am writing stuff. Just a little bit at a time where I'm like, oh, this would go well with this story, and this will go well with this story. And then I get into these bouts of where I'm like, I really start to imagine a specific story, and then I'll get into writing it, and then, you know, something else catches my eye, and then I'm working on something else.
Oh, yeah. My teacher's always, I was a creative writer in school, and like, I was pretty okay, but like, my teachers would always get annoyed with me because I'd be like, I'd always get new ideas in the middle of my ideas. I'd be like, oh, I have this idea for a story. And then it's like, I have this other idea. This one totally sucks that I'm working on right now. And I'd just like completely scrap it and work on this new thing and then completely scrap it.
Yeah.
And I tried screenwriting for a while. That was really hard. So, you know, writing has always been tough for me because I'm not, like, as great at grammar and, like, technical writing as I wish I was. Like, that's the thing that I always wish I was better at. It's, like, you know, it's, like, creative-wise, like, I'm fine. But, like, grammatically, it's, like, not perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, I'm not very good at grammar either. Yeah. But what I've realized that I am good at is knowing what sounds good.
Right.
What sounds good and what reads good. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's like the whole finding your voice a little bit is that I've gotten some sort of a grip on that.
Do you pepper in any comedy now into what you write, or is it like completely kind of separate from comedy?
Yeah, I do. I have moments, you know, like I have a story about a genie. And the genie is a cosmic being who's been alive for millennia, but he has like a snarky kind of attitude and the way he thinks and shit. And you know, I have little bits of. It's not all super serious and super scary and shit like that.
Right.
And some of it I actually have about like comics. Like there is, you know, I have a story, story called Laugh Reacts. Where it's a story I wrote from during the COVID outbreak, where I imagined what the future of stand-up comedy would be like, and it was basically a VR world of comedy, and that's basically what the story was based in. But I'll tell you one story I'm working on, which I think is I think is going to be pretty cool. I think this. I like the idea. Mm-hmm. It's called Hysterical. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on it for a while. And Hysterical is a story about this this washed up headliner from the 70s. Mm-hmm. Not 70s, but 80s. Washed up from the 80s. In the 80s, he blew up. So just imagine like an Eddie Murphy type of guy.
Right.
Or like a George Carlin type of guy who blew up, super famous. But now in modern days, he's like 60-something years old, and you know, he's still trying to be relevant, but now he's being canceled left and right for some shit that he said, and he's not selling as many tickets, and what you end up finding out is, so he does the show where he's about to headline this small show in the Midwest, mm-hmm. and a guy who opens for him, he finds out that this guy has more followers than him, and he's actually more famous, and he just pops up to do to open for him. And he gets bigger laughs, everything, bigger respect, and then he goes to leave. They go to leave the show afterwards. But as they go to leave the show, the guy who came for a guest spot, his phone's not working to call an Uber. So he asks the headliner if he can get a ride with him. And so the headliner's like, yeah, sure. And they're in an area where there's, like, no cell phone service. There's no way to call anybody or nothing. So they drive, and what ends up happening is the headliner ends up killing the opener.
Oh. Right?
And when he kills the opener, what he finds out is that he kills the opener for, like, an occult sacrifice, right? And the reason why he does that is because he sold his soul in the 1980s in order to be the great comic that he is today.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so he fears he's losing that deal. Like, he lost, like, he's not, he wants another deal. So he kills the opener in order to summon this demon. And when he summons the demon, the demon's like, you're already got your soul, dude. You got nothing to trade.
Right.
He's like, you're done. Like, your deal is done, bro. Like, you suck now. And there's nothing you can do about it. Like, there's nothing, no way you can get around it. And so he's like, you basically killed this guy for no reason. And so the demon shits on him and whatever, but the guy refuses for that to be the case. And so he gets into, like, you know, when, you know, in, like, movies when they look up, like, ancient manuscripts and shit like that.
Right.
But he gets into looking up ancient manuscripts to try to find a demon that he can make a deal with. And he ends up finding a demon. It's actually a one that I found from research, which is the demon of typos. Typos and making fun of people. Oh. And it's like a demon, I forget from what culture, but it's from like 5,000 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so he ends up summoning this one demon, and then he makes a deal with the demon. But what the deal is that the demon always wanted to be a comedian.
Oh, that's perfect.
So, yeah, so the demon ends up possessing him. But the thing is, here's the deal. Whenever the comic, the guy who gets possessed by this demon again, whenever he says anything funny, it's always the demon that says it, not the guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever anything funny is said, the guy completely blacks out. And so, like, for example, like, if the comic were to go on stage and kill for an hour, he doesn't remember any of it.
He blacks out.
And so as the story goes on, he loses more and more chunks of his life until the demon pretty much completely takes over his mind. And that's, like, pretty much where the story ends.
Wow.
But
that sounds so awesome. Of, like, yeah, that just sounds, like, so cool of an idea. And yeah, that's, like, perfect.
Yeah, thanks. I think... you know, I always thought the idea of selling your soul to the devil is very classic story.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I always wondered what it would look like if the comic did that.
And I mean, it's very, you know, that's a total, like, that's a good parable for, you know, a lot of what goes on nowadays with social media and older comics and, like, being around people. You know, it's funny, I talk to, you know, a lot of older comedians, and it's like when they started in the 80s, like, even at open mics they could get paid, and now it's like it's so tough to break. They even realize how tough it is to break in now. There are people who, you know, who started doing comedy like in the 70s and 80s, and they say to me, it's like, you know, it's way different now, where it's so much harder to pop and break and get anywhere.
Yeah, it's so you know, Being hilarious, being funny is not as fascinating as it used to be.
No.
You know?
And everyone sort of wants to have that, you know, that bit of fame now. It's kind of, you know, it's kind of a thing that people sort of search for now is, you know, especially with our generation of, you know, we had that generation of people like who kind of want to be famous. And, like, I think comics, we kind of can resent people like that because we feel like with comedy we have actual abilities. So we're like, no, I have something to offer. But it's like everyone has that same drive inside them of, like, they want attention a little bit.
Yeah, no, for sure. Everybody wants attention.
Yeah.
And for any, even people who are introverted like me, right. Like, I want attention too. You know what I mean? And anybody who says that they don't want attention is lying.
Right. Yeah.
Everybody wants to be recognized, especially for their intelligence or what comes out of their head.
Yeah, for sure. And that's a really cool thing with stand-up is, like, you get to see, like, inside someone's, like, mind. You get to see, like, what they're working with and what they play with. And it's like, yeah, this is like, a good look in someone's, you know, mindset of, and I just think it's really cool, like, just that you've been able to, you know, do that, you know. And
fuck yeah, thanks, man.
I feel like you've been around, like, you know, it's kind of so crazy how underrated the New Jersey scene is. Like, we have so many great people and, like, so much great stuff going on. It's, like, really cool to look at.
Yeah, I mean, the way I kind of see the New Jersey comedy scene, not to disrespect the Marines, but
right.
I see the comedy scene in New Jersey as, like, the Marines of the comedy scene in the world, in America.
Yeah.
There are so many great comics in New Jersey, but there's not much to work with. And why I say is that we're, like, the comedy scene out here is like the Marines, is because the Marines are great soldiers, but they're given almost little to work with. Like,
right.
Little to nothing to work
with. Yeah.
You know? And with that little to nothing to work with, they do great things.
Right. And I feel like, for the most part, the really cool thing is, like, just looking at the past, like, almost 10 years that I've been doing this, I've known you for 8 years, it's like, you know, we kind of get to see everyone evolve, and everyone becomes sort of, in a good way, like, micro-celebrities to us. We're like, we know all these different characters for so many years, and we get to see them evolve, and, like, you know, it's just really cool to me to, like, look back on stuff now and be like, I've known these people since they were, like, 20, and now we're in our 30s.
Yeah, man. It's a trip. For sure.
Yeah. Have you been hanging out with, like, a couple more people? Like, who are your people that you usually, like, do stuff with now? Like, shows and stuff?
Well, the person I'm with most of the time is my friend Matt Rivera. He's, like, he's my roommate, and we also...
Oh, he's great. Yeah.
...together. But, yeah, you know... I have my boy Danny Braff.
Oh yeah, Danny Braff is.
I love hanging with Danny.
You know what? Danny is another guy of, like, he has, like, I know it's probably not, you know, it's roasted in his glasses from me, but he is, like, the dream that I want of, like, just how many comics he gets to meet and be friends with and, like, work with, and, like, he's gotten. And it must be so cool to be around him, because it's just that people that you get to work off of.
And... Yeah, for sure. I mean, Danny's just an awesome person in general.
Oh, yeah.
But he's a great example of the grass being greener on the other side. Because, you know, it might look... It is awesome, all the things that he's doing.
Right.
But the amount of stress he
has. Oh, yeah, there's probably a ton of stress.
The amount of work that he puts into it. The amount of time and money and everything that he does, it's increasing, like, just, you know, just keep pushing in his career. Yeah, it's a lot of people wouldn't have the gusto or the drive.
No, I think it's totally fair to say that a lot of people who kind of would want to be in that position, like, would not really live up to the expectation as much as Danny does, you know. There's a thing to it of, like, no, you have to be a good host, a good, like, mm-hmm. You have to rise to the occasion, I guess. And it's like him being able to do that is just great. And always to be around that is, like, I feel like he's a great unifier also of getting younger people in comedy together with older people and just, like, kind of that more unifying.
Yeah, for sure, man. I'm truly proud to be a part of the scene and to know the people that I know here.
Yeah, it's really cool. So you still have your mic in
South Amboy.
So yeah, you're still doing that?
I am until I leave. I'm leaving in a few weeks.
When are you're going to Texas, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Here, one moment. Well, I just gotta stop real quick just to say if this 2 years ago with to visit Eric Hardbach, and I was there for like 3 days, and it was awesome. You know,
that's cool, man.
It was. It's a really, and like I saw that Caitlin Kostas went there like a couple months ago, a few months ago. It's like a great. It's really great to see that. Like, are you kind of gonna be around like the Kill Tony type of guys, like that type of stuff? Do you think?
Well, I'm gonna try out every Monday.
Oh, that's good. Yeah, that's really cool.
I'm gonna try to get on at least.
Yeah, because I think they'd like you. Like, you know, they like anyone who's, you know, who's capable and good, and you know they can sort of things. Well, that's a tough, you know, I can imagine it's a tough, you know, thing to get picked, you know, for that too.
Yeah, you know, it's just the odds. You know, you just gotta somehow beat the odds.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird because I know a lot of people that I know in Jersey have been pulled. You know, like Louis Darvel, you know, Vic Sedino, Caitlin Kostas.
Yeah.
Pedro Garcia. So many people I know have been pulled. So I feel like it's another one of those things where, like, if it can happen next to you, it can happen to you.
Right. Yeah, so that's really cool. So when are you going to Texas, like moving there?
March.
Oh, March. Oh. Yeah, that's really cool. I think you're going to, you know, you're going to kill it there. You know, it's really cool.
Thanks, man. I hope so.
Yeah. So thank you so much for doing this. I'll let you go so that you can do what you need to. Just thank you for giving me your time and doing this again.
Of course, man. I appreciate you inviting me on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Anytime. Hopefully I'll get to see you before you leave.
Same here.
Yeah. All right. Bye.